This is your last chance to enter the Ohio Lottery's Fun Turns 50 promotion. Score $3,500 and two tickets to the epic party at the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, where you could win part of another $400,000 in cash prizes. Enter the new 50th anniversary scratch-off or $50 worth of eligible non-winning $5 or $10 scratch-offs and My Lotto rewards through the Ohio Lottery app. Hurry up! The last entry deadline is May 13th. Lottery players are subject to Ohio laws and commission regulations. Play responsibly.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
Introducing ADT Self-Setup, featuring everything from motion sensors to Google Nest cams. It can be easily installed at your convenience and adapts as your needs change. You can add more products at any time, and your system easily moves wherever life takes you. Plus, when every second counts, you can trust ADT's 24/7 professional monitoring. When the most trusted name in home security adds the intelligence of Google, you've got a home with no worries. Go to ADT.com today or call 1-800-ADT. ASAP.
Let's get done for eSports!
Hello and welcome to Nerf This, the esports show that is rebranding as the B-Sports show, because we like burgers. I'm your host, Brian Huff, and I'm joined, as I always am, by a very reluctant Seven. Hello, sir.
I was hoping it was going to be breakfast, man. How long have you been planning that one? Have you, like...
No, it literally just popped in my... You know me, I don't put any thought into this. It came to me as we were recording another segment. I was like, oh my God, I can make an IHOP joke. And so here we are. I also agree. Like, couldn't it just have been International House of Breakfast? That's what you do. Instead, you decided to pivot to burgers. That being said, Burger King and Wendy's cracking my shit up with their social media responses. Now it's Pancake King.
Oh, geez. All right. I love how it's like the eSports show, and then all we do is talk about food.
We just rebranded. Listen to what I'm saying.
Oh, that's right, man.
Burger Sports.
What are all these notes for? What are these topics? What are we talking about? We should just be talking about the menu.
There's a new type of garlic aioli that tastes amazing with a Wagyu beef burger. Juicy. But no, we have a lot we got to get to today. It is E3 week, which means we're going to get to nerd out near the end of the show about some of the awesome trailers, and we'll play the stupid game of, is it going to be an eSport? But first, we're going to talk about the Rainbow Six Pro League again. It's been a bit of an up-and-down week for that group of folks. We talked maybe 3 weeks ago, I think it was, about changes coming to the Pro League, and now we have quite a bit more information. We know the teams that are going to be involved, and it looks pretty good. I mean, there's a playbook here now, like, of how these smaller leagues can spin something up quickly that looks very legitimate, and it is legitimate, I should say, looks legitimate, and provides a lot of stability for the level of play that the games are at. I continue to be impressed.
Yeah, I think Ubisoft looks like they have their stuff together, and my only question is, why didn't this happen a year ago? They've been plugging away at esports. Even when we started the show, they were talking like, there's some amazing stuff coming, or amazing things in the pipeline for esports and Rainbow Six, which I love. I really, really love watching Rainbow Six. But it just never seemed to really take off as an esport.
Yep.
Now, I mean, I'm sure Ubisoft will argue, like, here are the numbers, we're doing better. I get it, but you're not tier one. But I always assumed it was like going to be more than the tier three or tier four, which it has been.
Yep.
But to see this group of teams that have jumped into this, their new structure for how they're going to do the new rules and how they're going to lay out the game just makes so much sense. And I'm hoping it will do well, if it will start on time, if it will do well, largely because it feels like if it hasn't taken off, then Ubi has taken like the last 2 years, essentially, to kind of like figure it out. And this looks like they've figured it out so far. Now, if they can just get a patch that makes things work, we'll be okay.
Whoops. So let's go through some of this. Some of this will be a little bit of a recap, but I think it's important to cover. So the new format for the Pro League this year, splitting each year into 2 6-month seasons. Prior to this, it was 3-month seasons, so they're making longer seasons and less of them. They're organizing the major in between each session, so there are currently the major in Paris and then the Invitational. They're increasing the number of land events. They've also confirmed, they've made a commitment to esports in general for Rainbow Six until 2020. Whether it'll continue in this format, we will see. But they have committed through 2020, so that is 2 more years past the 2018 season we're in now, for those of you that can't do math, which you're probably like, oh, yay, 2 years. That's a hell of a lot more commitment than we tend to get out of anything in esports. So kudos to them for that. They're introducing a revenue share-based pilot program featuring 11 of the teams in Europe, North America, Latin, and Asian Pacific. Those pilot programs continues like charms, which are the things that hang off the guns for those of you that play Rainbow Six,
right,
or don't. Or, and there's also the skins, and they will receive 30% of all revenue from those items that are sold. So that's awesome. They're also changing the percentages of the prize pool and how they get distributed out to the teams. So now we have 11 teams included in the program. So this is Penta Sports, Evil Geniuses, SK, FaZe Clan, Ninjas in Pajamas, Fnatic, Vitality, Rogue, Mouse Sports, Team Liquid, and Immortals. So your perennial esports brands, which, much like we said when Paladins did this with Wessa, is good to have these teams involved.
And also look at Immortals is going with a Latin America team as well.
Yep.
Which is something that Noah's been jumping into in the last week or so.
And everybody assumed it was going to be a Counter-Strike team, remember, when he was down there visiting people.
Yeah.
Got all
well, up. No, he does have a Immortals area. Noah.
Well, yeah, he was down there looking for Brazilian. Yeah, he was looking out for Brazilian players is what people were. He was going to sign SK.
Well, that's a thought. It's still it's still up in the air. But so there, he's bringing back MIBR and CSGO. But the fact is he's continuing to build the Immortals brand or continuing to invest in Latin American esports, which is cool. I think that's he respects it so far from what I've seen. Mm-hmm. And I'm glad he's heading up some investment down there.
I'll be interested to see if that, just as a random aside, be interested to see if that brings him into games like Smite, for example, that have actually a pretty large following in Brazil specifically compared to what they have in America. Like you and I found this out going to Hi-Rez Expo a few years ago, where it's like, yeah, we have all these Brazilian media that we bring because the game is super popular there. So maybe he'll start it up there. That'd be pretty cool. So a good investment here, which Ubisoft, they're certainly sticking to their word. I don't think this is enough to elevate it to some crazy level, but it does provide a level of legitimacy for the game and for the league to have the teams that they have involved. They're putting revenue sharing model in place, which is a good way to guarantee some stability for the organizations that don't go as well. Now, not every team that is participating in this in the Pro League is part of this program. The 11 teams that I named are the 11 that are part of the pilot-based revenue share program. So we'll see if they continue to expand that over the next couple of years. But not everything went well for the Pro League, because they've now, due to a tech, this is the longest technical break in the history of esports. They have to take a week before they can actually kick off the season due to a patch that is causing a problem.
Yeah, so there's an interesting thing here, and I'm going to derail this just a little bit because I was something just kind of clicked, and I'm wondering how much this rumor is true about Tencent buying out ESL and ECS, essentially.
I get whiplash from your orthogonal. Yes, I have heard.
So, okay, so Tencent is looking to buy into the. So, but Tencent also has some ownership or some controlling shares or within Ubisoft,
among many other companies.
Right, amongst everybody else, but if Tencent was also looking to buy into ESL, then they'd also be owning DreamHack. So the fact that they're talking about further pushing Rainbow Six at DreamHack, and Tencent has some stake in Ubisoft, and Ubisoft doing well in the esports scene. Oh, man. No. We haven't talked about this. This is like a whole other episode, I know. But like that's...
In the end, everything's owned by Tencent, so...
Right. I'm just wondering if there's actually some more legitimacy to that now that I'm seeing this kind of stuff coming from Ubisoft. Or why were they waiting? Were they waiting for a Tencent thing? Like, I don't know. Anyways, that aside, that's a scary future, I think, personally. But yeah, the ESL essentially having to postpone it this week because of a patch not working out correctly. I mean, if you look at the new rules and the things that they've done and tried to put in place, it makes sense that maybe out of the gate is just not going to work right. Right. You know, I mean, it seems like they've essentially kind of rushed the new format piece. My guess is also that they aren't playing on like the normal servers and so on and so forth. They're probably smart.
Yes.
Hello, Hearthstone. and so it's again, it's probably a specific patch towards the servers in which they're playing on. So I don't necessarily know why, but they had to delay it a week, which delays everybody a week. But I'd rather it work.
Yeah, and right? we've seen this in the past, right? Like Overwatch League has dealt with this issue because the patch is specific to the esports side of things, where they have like the observer code and things of that nature. And for this case, if they said they're going to play on this particular patch for this season and not being able to kick off with it, this is a bold move, but I'm going to say a controversial statement. I like the idea of delaying it a week and playing with something you promised and more dynamic than having to leave, you know, a rework of a hero, for example, out of Overwatch League because, like, I can't do it, and we want consistency throughout the entire season, so we are just not going to play with this patch for a whole other stage, which is the direction Overwatch League went. I get the implications of delaying for a week is massive for an operation the size of Overwatch League, but it's still a bold move on Ubi's part.
Yeah, I mean, you haven't kicked off, right? So it's better to do it now than in the middle of it or after 1 week and then lose some momentum. Overwatch, I'm sure, had some kind of weird contractual stuff for you're going into the final stage. Like, you can't just delay it until you fix things. Right.
Everything's moved by a week.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, it doesn't work the same that way, but yeah, I agree with it, with you and with ESL and Ubisoft for delaying it a week.
Thank you for agreeing with all of us. We are glad that you validated our decision.
That's it. Show's over.
It only took 3 years to get to the point.
We're canceled. That's how you know we're canceled. Seven agreed and we're done.
We're back to burgers. All right.
Bye.
So if you want to tune into the Pro League, and I'm going to give this another go. Like, I struggle. I like playing this game. This game is actually a ton of fun if you have not tried out Rainbow Six.
I jump scare all the time still on that game.
I know. It is harder to watch as an eSport. We've talked about this in the past. If you check out one of our old episodes around Rainbow Six Siege, like, it definitely has some observer challenges that they're still trying to figure out. But it kicks off now with the new official start date of June 18th, so that'll be coming up next week. So make sure to check that out. A little bit of Overwatch League news. So we talked in the past that there are talking about expanding by up to 6 teams. That number has been reconfirmed again. And it appears one of those Southeast Asian teams, because if you remember, they were talking about doing 2 from the Americas, 2 from Europe and the Middle East, and 2 from the Asia-Pacific region. It looks like one of those is potentially in Australia, in the city of Melbourne, or Melbourne, if you are from Australia. This is an interesting move in light of... I get it, but this regionality thing I can't get out of my head. When I'm reading things, there's another article that flew across the wire in the last week or two about how they're talking about they want to be playing home games by 2020, and now you've got, like, Shanghai and Melbourne and London, and it makes me really nervous. It's not that I don't think Australia should have a team, but the cost of, like, moving this production around the world, it's insane to me that they're going to do this.
Yeah, I agree that Australia should get a team. And I think a lot of people assumed it was going to be Sydney over Melbourne, right? So,
yeah, Melbourne.
But, yep, Melbourne. So I don't know why I say that. Melbourne. I don't know why you started that. I don't even know how I originally say it or how I would have said it, but now I've been tainted with Melbourne.
Yeah, all the Australians are going to be sending us angry tweets. You're saying it all wrong with your crappy American accent.
Send me good beer that's not Foster's, because I know Foster's is awful there. Send
it's
me good
Australian
beer.
For beer. Let's get all the stereotypes out of the way.
Yeah, but also, I mean, the group that came out with this article was the Australian Financial Review. So not maybe the most tied into esports. They are citing people. Again, it could have been as simple as Blizzard looking into it, right? Looking into what it would cost to build something there, or what whatever it may be, we've seen this before where like a simple inquiry is to, well, we want to consider it turn into, it's a coming. I don't know. Like, it makes sense that they would be somewhere in Australia. It's they need to have one Australian team.
They do.
I think Australia is huge for esports for them as well. As one of their top contender teams is from there. And so it makes sense. I think it'd be good. I don't know what happens in 2020. It'll be pushed out a week, and then they'll start moving people around, maybe. I don't know.
They're really
pushed out a week, and then they'll reconsider that it'll be 2022 before that happens.
Yes. I think they're really just counting on Elon Musk's tunnel system coming online before 2020 yeah. so they can just, like, tube around the world. Some other cities being rumored, Berlin, Paris, Amsterdam, a second team based in London, which, Jesus, Mary and Joseph, I don't get this. Like, there are too many. If you're really about diversity and spreading esports around the country, when you make these moves that are all about the money, which is what I truly believe the second LA franchise was about, and here we are with a second London franchise with Chicago, Seattle. Like, there's a bunch of areas that don't have a team yet, both in the U.S. and outside of the U.S., that I think are far more deserving if that is your goal than just like, well, we can sell London for another $60 million to this sucker, and we'll just have two London teams like we have two L.A. teams. Like, it just doesn't make a whole lot of sense to me at this point.
No.
I mean, it does. I get why you're doing it, but I just wish you wouldn't do it.
A second London team being on the radar is largely there because of Fnatic. Fnatic is based out of there. So that's why the rumor of a second London team is there.
Yeah.
And that was also a huge joke when between Cloud9 and Fnatic, when Cloud9 got a spot in London, basically. It was almost one of the right around the same time-ish, or like a month or two after Fnatic was touting like their whole office being there and yada, yada, yada. So, anyways.
Wah, wah. They're right up there with the 76ers' involvement in esports. It's all legit. It's great.
Oh, man. I saw on some like random esports site, I think it was Golden State, whatever it is, looking for like I don't know, their NBA, is it their NBA 2K league or something like that?
Yes.
Looking for like a general manager of esports, basically on like a esports Craigslist kind of place. I'm like, oh man, it's not looking good for you guys if that's the case.
Don't get me started. I don't want to go on the rant I went on earlier in the week about the 2K league because it was, I probably picked the wrong games to watch, but I was not impressed. Moving on, let's talk a little bit about an announcement from E-League. I'm treading lightly here. Disclaimer, we have involvement with E-League. I'm going to try to cover this without pissing off people that sign our checks. So E-League has announced they have partnered with Kraken Black Spice Rum, which I've never had. I imagine it's tasty. I don't know.
I'm going to drink lots of it when we're in Atlanta.
Yeah, in fact, E-League, hey, in it. I know you listen. You have my address. I would love my complimentary case of Kraken Black Spice Rum.
Let me finish moving, and then I will just come down with my car, and you can just load it up.
Yes. So they are now, I love this, the rum brand is now the first official distilled spirits partner of E-League, which is just great. I need that on a t-shirt, by the way. Like, that would be pretty awesome. But the E-League Kraken Boss Battle will bring fans face-to-face with some of their favorite pro players competing against each other in front of a live audience. This is interesting for a couple of reasons. One, that it is signaling an interesting, we'll call it expansion for now. I don't want to call it a change in direction. I don't know anything, by the way, behind the scenes of what's going on here. But it's an interesting expansion of the content we've seen out of E-League that I think has started with the Challenger series that they did the reality-based TV show for leading up to the Street Fighter V Invitational. This is also very interestingly sounding like some of the ideas you and I were tossing around when we talked about Fortnite and the interesting bounty system that they've done for the ninja events. And this is a way to bring esports content in a little bit more digestible way. You can bring other games into the equation without having to support, like, how do I televise this? This is something we talked a lot around Dota last year when they were doing a lot of the documentary type content. This is another thing that falls into that category. It's very interesting to see them go this direction.
Yeah, and I think this kind of stuff works well for them because they want to be kind of agnostic to a specific game. So creating these just like random one-off invitationals, like last year? Was it Virtus Pro versus, was it Astralis?
Yeah, like the rematch showdown.
Thing. Rematch, like that kind of stuff was really cool. And I like that kind of thought that they put into it, right? And so I also think that I don't necessarily want to see them go the reality TV show route, right? I get there's a couple of reasons behind it. One, you want to kind of create, just like anybody who streams, you want to kind of create a general rhythm to things going out like every week. So every Friday night, you want to know that E-League's on with something esports related, whatever it may be.
Yeah.
Doesn't have to be the same thing every time. Just
it doesn't have to be a tournament
something.
Every time either.
Right. It doesn't have to be a tournament. So, you know, they had the Dota 2 documentaries that ran for a couple of weeks. And so having all these things that even if it's documentary style, versus reality TV, whatever you want to call it. I guess they're both technically the same in some aspects. Having content is good. It reminds me of the old days of G4 TV, and they had all these. Yep. They always had something going on. You could kick on G4 TV, you know, like, hey, there's something gaming going on.
And then
probably
it's Cops.
Not a good. Probably, yeah, then they got bought and then just turned into reruns of Cops. But so probably not the best example, but I love that. And I remember like that was the
all burgers,
that was
all
great
the
because I would watch anything gaming related. Right. And right. A lot of gamers will sit in front of their TV, pop on TBS. It's E-League time. I'll watch something. I know it'll be entertaining, whether or not it's done in studio or documentary style, you know, the real world E-League version. It doesn't matter. Like they need something. And so this kind of content makes sense.
It's a similar
and I think
direction to
they
that.
Need to keep it going.
Yeah, and it's a similar direction to the gaming block we've seen on like Disney XD, right? That like IGN was involved in, where you're like it shows that there is interest in that type of content, and I also think it's a good way to build up the brands of individual players across esports more, right? Like this is something that is not, you know, right along with Malik, you know, hosts having coffee in cars or whatever the hell they're calling that Toyota thing that the Overwatch League is doing. It's something similar to that, but where they're in more of just like a chill environment. I actually, as much as I kind of like agree with you in like the true reality TV, like the real world kind of Street Fighter stuff that E-League has done, at first I was like, oh God, this is going to be cringy. But if you think about it at a basic level, like you now know those FGC players in a different way than you might have known them if you just, you know, get a 30-second, you know, bumper before they go on stage or something of that nature. And it's a little bit more relatable, too, because I always feel like while they're really well done when E-League or any other league goes in and does those, like, 2 or 3 minute things, they can get a little redundant in a city. Do your parents think of esports? And this is more of just like, hey, here's low-tier God being a dick to people in an apartment. Like,
yeah, and when you also look at some of this stuff, the more you know about a player, more you know about how much effort they put into the game or whatever it may be, or just more of an understanding of a game, you start to realize that like, oh, hey, this game is way more complicated or has much more depth than maybe is on the surface. And some people tend to like games a little bit more because of just how complex they are. And you know that like just how much goes into it. Like, someone's looking at, say, some FGC like Street Fighter V players, and they're like, "Oh yeah, I played that in arcade. How is that a sport?" And then you go into the point down to the fact that they're looking at like frames data. They're looking at all kinds of stuff and the amount that they practice and everything that's going on and how fast they move and how they think and how they try and get into each other's heads. The more you know about that, the more you're like, "Wow, there's a lot more to this."
Yeah, they're just not mashing buttons.
Right, it's not just like they're not just randomly hitting stuff. Right, go up and try and play against one of them, and then try not to cry on TV. So like that kind of thing. But TBS, what I've always said is that the greatest esports audience out there is the people who aren't watching it, right? And so you want to be able to create these things that captivate them and bring them in, not just serve the communities that are already being served by a DreamHack or another ESL or whatever it may be. You want to grab people who are just maybe flipping channels on TBS or maybe
that
randomly
late night
you're
slot
watching
is,
something on Twitch.
That late night slot is great for that, actually, right? Like that is interesting. You bring up a good point because it's a different slant that I haven't really thought of, which is like esports being on TV is great. But if I tune in and I just see a video game being played and there's nothing else around it and I don't understand what's going on, I'm far less likely to tune in. But if I'm flipping looking for Cops and I flip across like the Challenger house and I'm like, oh, well, what's this thing? Like, oh, they're playing video. Oh, what the hell? Like,
why is everyone wearing sweatpants?
It's like this is weird. Yeah. Like, oh, she's hot. Oh, that guy's an asshole. Like the same things you go through when you watch the real world. And like maybe it does pull people in. They're like, oh, now I'm more interested in Street Fighter. It's a gateway. It's a different type of gateway. And that's interesting. I've not thought about it from that perspective. But that they are smarter than I, clearly, at E-League, which is why they're doing it. And we're just rambling into a microphone. So no news on yet that I've seen when this will come out, but Kraken is now the official marketing partnership will kick off as part of the Street Fighter V Invitational, so we'll start seeing that stuff pop up. But there is more to come on that front from E-League, it sounds like. And if you and I don't get on an episode of this, I'd be very upset.
If I don't get some Kraken, I'm going to be upset.
Send the Kraken. Let's talk a little Hearthstone. So you alluded to this in an earlier episode. If you listen to Esports Daily, you would know this. If you did not, why the hell are you not listening to Esports Daily? But you talked a bit about this on that, and I want to give you a chance to elaborate. But there's been a lot of drama around HCT Seoul, specifically with an issue with a nerfed card and people being unprepared. So you'll be far better at the details on this. But this is, again, like the HCT making a very obvious and public misstep.
Well, it's Blizzard Team 5 dropping a patch that essentially broke some things. And the fact is two things. One, they didn't tell anybody the patch was coming. And two, they dropped it hours after the deadline to submit decks for HCT Seoul, which is a Hearthstone tour stop. It's basically backed by Blizzard, not necessarily run by Blizzard, but it's backed by them. So it's something which you earn HCT points for and have the ability to kind of move on throughout the year because of it. So that's a pretty big deal, especially when one of the decks primarily was the Quest Druid / Malygos Druid. And it was some of the interactions basically like whether or not a minion counts towards that quest. And part of the way that deck functions is once you trigger that quest, then you are able to more easily trigger your combo, which is just smack people in the face for like 42 damage for basically in one turn, like an OTK basically. And so what happened is it broke that. And so what they did is they decided to they came out earlier in the day and said, well, we're going to just continue to make people use the current patch is what we're playing on. Sorry. And people were like, no, not sorry, not cool. A lot of people even jumped into it. Some you wouldn't expect, like Brian Kibler, but Brian Kibler is generally always gives constructive feedback. But a lot of people are like, oh my gosh, he's upset about it.
Right.
And he was right about it. Like a lot of these players involved in this tour stop paid their own money to go there. And they're not a team isn't helping them. They're doing it themselves.
No, because it's now you find tour out, stop. So it's like, this is right. The whole point of these things.
And now you find the day of or the morning of or the day before that, oh, you can't. One of your four decks or one of your five decks is screwed, or your four decks is actually screwed now. And that sucks, right? Because it wasn't just the Druid, which is, well, I'll get to that in a second. That patch broke a lot of things within the history and how certain decks in general work. So if you were playing like an Exodia Major, Shudderwalk is actually the really good example. Two people, I believe, still brought Shudderwalk. Well, Blizzard didn't cave. They came to their senses and said, okay, we'll let people who submitted the Quest Druid decks resubmit. Now, this is there's a lot of problems with that mentality as well. That actually was just like a half-assed way of doing it.
Right.
And largely it came down to the point like, well, there was 15 people who submitted or something like that. And the problem with that is that if anybody was essentially built their deck, and there's a deck meta around, there's a whole meta
countering,
around
competing. You're trying to counter
countering
the deck
a specific too, yeah. deck. That's probably, again, it's most people probably weren't trying to counter that one specifically. But if you were, now you're screwed because now they've allowed the people who were bringing it to not bring it.
Yeah, and now you have a dead deck. So now you have more people with dead decks.
Right. And if you're someone who brought a Shudderwalk deck, it's publicly known how to basically bug out your deck and you lose. So it's just, it's not cool. So let everybody resubmit.
Do they have the same deck ban system in the HCT tour stops that they do in the main events, like where you could basically ban out? So you could be even more screwed because somebody could purposely ban out something else, forcing you to play the deck they know will not work.
Right. And what happened with Shudderwalk was basically, a long story short, if something happened in terms of one of your minions was, say, polymorphed or silenced, Shudderwalk wouldn't repeat that battle cry because it was drawing the state from the history or whatever it may be, and it didn't see that minion, so therefore you didn't get like duplicates or it didn't decrease something. So anybody playing against you said, oh, I just silenced that one and now I've screwed your Shudderwalk value out. Sucks.
I get it. We're rough around Blizzard in general, especially around the HCT, and it's hard when it's not the esports arm's necessary, you know, responsibility for the original problem, which is like Team 5 dropped something and it wasn't coordinated well. I get all that, but like, here we are again, like trying to make snap decisions that, that you're kind of up against a rock and a hard place. And I get that part, but man, it just, like with the points counting and some of the other issues they've had over the years of the HCT, it just always saddens me because it's such an individual sport. And I think oftentimes the game, the players are impacted more directly when things like this happen than if it, like you said, like if there's an organization to absorb the cost of them moving around, that's just not going to be as widespread, especially at this level of the HCT. And that's unfortunate.
Yeah, and well, what also sucks about this is, you know, they knew HCT, so what was going on. They chose to drop this patch, which fundamentally changed. While they say, we were just trying to correct things back to how they should be working. Doesn't matter. Doesn't matter. You told everybody to submit, and then you broke their stuff.
Yeah.
And then you said, hey, you can't, or some of you now can. It just, it made it a mess, and it really messes with the legitimacy of a tournament when something like that happens.
Yep.
And makes a lot of people really, 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 really mad who work very hard in the scene to get there.
Yep.
And ironically, the person who won at Hunter Ace actually had a Malygos Druid, but he didn't do the quest version. He actually ran the non-quest version.
He's like, I'm,
but he was the only, I think he was the only one to bring it.
Not
one of two
trouble.
People brought, but they both brought the non-quest version. So.
Blizzard.
Anyways.
We love you. If you need some help answering emails, sending emails, asking questions of people, you know.
I don't see why they wouldn't have just dropped it after the fact.
Yes. Yeah, there's a coordination
there's nothing going on this
here.
Week.
But, somebody is in a blameless Agile retro right now about that 7.
Yeah. I mean, there were other things that were affected, but including Tess Gray and a lot of other interactions. But the main one that really did have an impact on that tournament was the Quest Druid and Shutterwalk bug.
Unfortunate.
Sadness.
Yes. All right. Well, we're going to take a quick break. And when we come back, we're going to be joined by our own Jules Scott to talk about this interesting article from the Esports Observer about the state of the HGC. And we're back, and it's time to talk a little HGC, and in order to do that, we need someone who has some damn idea what they're talking about. So we have Jules. Hello, Jules. Welcome to the show.
Hi, guys. It's good to see you. It's been a while.
Can I refer to you as our Jules Scott now, as opposed to Jules Scott of other things?
I think we can make this official, don't you?
Maybe. I don't know. 7. How do you feel about commitment? I know you got some
I'm already hitched to this show.
It's the most glorious marriage we have ever had. It has been a wonderful honeymoon of 3 years.
Yeah, exactly. The most fruitful relationship I've had thus far.
That's so sad.
There's a lot of people I don't want to ever hear that line. Sorry.
He's like, what? What? Yeah.
Hello.
But enough about our relationship problems. We're talking about the HGC, but specifically this article, Jules, it came out from the Esports Observer. Is throwing shade, as the kids say, the proper way to discuss some of the conversation in this article?
I don't know if you want to say throwing shade. It's more of a synopsis of where we've come from and where we are now. And
it's such a rosy version of this.
It is, but it's like they go kind of dark because they go into the whole why aren't sponsors staying in with the teams. And they really kind of dig into that. And they actually talk to actual sponsors who have left the scene, which is kind of cool because you can actually hear what they're saying.
Instead of us randomly conjecturing about why they do that.
Exactly.
But how do
and
we keep
also,
our jobs then?
I know. You just got to dig further. Got to dig deeper.
Pringles, what's up?
And but you know they also talked to one of the current sponsors and was like everything's great and it's great for us, we're kind of new too. So the basis of this article though, and you know we're all Blizzard fans here, is that HGC has always kind of been the redheaded stepchild of the Blizzard esports universe, and now that you've got Overwatch League, it's like I've been a fan for so long that you kind of feel like you've been left behind for Big Brother, that Actually, it's little brother because we're big brother. Like, we were here.
You're the older one, but you're the bastard child, apparently, because they don't want to give any investment. And this is actually interesting. So Seven and I, on several occasions, have talked with Sam Braithwaite, usually at BlizzCon. It's like our annual conversation with him about how things are going in the HGC. And if I'm being frank, sometimes, and I'd love your take on this, but I get a lot of positivity, and I get a lot of, like, grandiose words that talk about ideas, but then when it comes down to, like, significant changes to the HGC, I don't necessarily see them, like, these leaps and bounds improvements that could make it something viable.
Well, I think a lot of what they've been doing is largely using the HGC as a testing ground for formats, right? I think they've done that for the past couple of years. They've changed it up. It's either that or they're trying to find something that totally works within HGC. But if you're changing the format every year, you're franchising, you're doing whatever it may be. I mean, those things can affect just how people perceive the league, like in this case, that it's having a lot of issues or it's not loved enough. But if you're changing it, and in the likelihood that you're changing with it, and you're wanting to make it better, right? you're not changing because it's not working necessarily, or because it's totally broken. I mean, if you left it the same and it was broken, then I would say yes, you're being treated unfairly. But trying new things to try and keep it alive, keep it healthy. In all honesty, if they didn't care enough about the HGC, they would have not done anything like 2-3 years ago, right? They would just left it as it was. People bailing, not necessarily doing the franchising, not creating any kind of structure, but they put some effort behind it. Is it as much effort as Overwatch League? No, because is the buy-in for a franchise in HGC $20 million? No. So
it's 25 cents.
Not exactly, right? So it's one of those things where I don't think they're necessarily being treated unfairly. I think Overwatch is the poster child for Blizzard esports. Everything is going behind that right now. But I think at the same point in time, like they're spread really thin. Like even look at what Call of Duty is getting, right? And that's another thing that's not necessarily under Blizzard's arm, but it's under Activision Blizzard's arm.
Yeah.
And it doesn't get as much love.
Yeah. And one of the things, speaking of Sam Braithwaite, like he now is over multiple games, esports. So mm-hmm. that obviously spreading him thin as well. So Jules, I agree with some of what Seven is saying here. Where do you draw the line between doing experimentation to try to find the right solution, knowing that may cause you some sponsors, and dealing with the just overall maybe general negativity that caused by sponsors leaving, right? Like this article is a perfect example. Like we're highlighting the fact that sponsors have left because they have not been happy with the options available to them. They refer to it as gimmicks. How much of that should they worry about? How bad does it look to have these sponsors depart while you're trying to figure this all out?
I think that the major problem that you're looking at with HGC is that it has always been a reactive mode format. They've always been never proactive, always reactive. And it's like, oh, we have this problem. We should fix that problem instead of anticipating the problem. And it gives a feeling like they don't really know what they're doing. And for the most part, they probably don't. And that's okay. I think the comparison comes into when you get Overwatch League and you have like these massive expectations of $20 million spots to be able to fill. And like, we're going to sell this. It's a no-brainer. We're going to get these rosters that are insanely good. And then there's HGC like, hey, guys, we can't even keep sponsors in the league itself because they don't feel like they're being treated fairly. In the article, they talked about Tricked Esport, who just recently left HGC. And the comments that were made in the article were that there wasn't a fair trade. Like, there's 8 teams in each region for HGC. NA, EU, Korea has a couple fewer, I think. But everybody wasn't treated equally. It was like the Top Guns, Fnatic and Indignitas would get the preferential treatment for these player summits. The ones that were on the bottom of the ladder had to figure out their schedules around Dignitas and Fnatic, and it was very unfair. And they were like, we can't make this work. Plus, they're also looking at the fact that they're just not drawing in the revenue unless these teams qualify for the big tournaments. And that's not helpful. Like, we just got back the revenue sharing program, the Twitch bits, the HTC cheer.
Yep.
Right.
Everybody was screaming about how it was like absent through 2018. Like, where the hell is it? What happened to cheer? Because it was
like you have the system in place. Yeah. You'd already done it previously. It's like not. It's not like it's a new thing.
Right, and they did it. It was very successful, and it just came back now. It's June. It came back for the mid-season brawl. Our regular season started in January.
Yeah, you've missed basically an entire half a season, and that matters because, like you said, it's revenue. And for a lot of the smaller teams, it's the best they can hope for. They're not going to draw big individual sponsors. And I do think part of the reason why you see this perceived bias to these larger organizations is, let's be honest, if I'm going to sell a Sour Patch Kids, I'm not going to do it on the back of Tricked Esport. Like, it's hard enough in general to do it for Heroes, because Heroes suffers from a very basic reality. Overwatch is, with maybe some argument, the top hero shooter, absent of any esport involvement, right? It is just the most popular game of its type, so making an esport of it and bringing top quality players to it is easy. You can sell sponsorships when you see that a large amount of people are aware of the game and aware of the players that you're going to attach these gimmicks to, right? When Malik is rolling around in a Toyota, it only matters if people care about the player sitting next to him. The HGC is at best, and I'm going to be a little brutal here, but is at best the fourth best MOBA like you can play, and that hurts it from the get-go, because when you have your League and your Dota, and I'd argue Smite to a large degree if you look around what's going around in Smite Pro League, you're going to have these types of problems. What I would actually love to see is not that it gets the love that Overwatch League gets, because it doesn't make sense to give it the love. You could invest the same amount of money in HGC as you do Overwatch League. You're not going to get the same results because, generally speaking, the game is not as popular. That's not to say it can't exist as an esport, but you have to scale your expectations to the size of the game. So with all that being said, I do feel like that's what Blizzard is doing to a certain extent. Now, I can't speak to what's going on here. It would not surprise me, in all the experience I've had in the last 3 years, like, people can't run esports. Like, there is, like, the number of things that could be solved by just, like, answering people's emails on time and, like, communicating when the player summit is to everyone. It's like, just type a couple extra email addresses. It's not that hard, and we laugh at it, but it is, like, a problem. But smaller esports have it more together. When was the last time you read something like this around, like, RLCS or Paladins or something of that nature? Because they take care of this type of thing that tends to cause this type of feelings, right? Like, yes, you probably are being biased against. It's probably not for a good reason. They need Dignitas, they need Fnatic, because those are the only brand names that matter, and they're hoping for some sort of residual. Now, I'm trying to be negative on HOTS here, but, like, I can't think, I don't know about you, Sam, but if you think about, like, the lower tier of esports, like, they are run pretty, you know, rough compared to some of the smaller esports that probably have smaller audiences but run more smoothly.
Yeah. Oh, well, one of the things we had talked about earlier was the Rainbow Six Pro League, right? And this is one I want to ask Jules, is you look at the Rainbow Six Pro League, which is just spinning up. There is no precedent. The only precedent set is it actually has lower viewership, more than likely, or at least it has, than HGC. In all honesty, like, it's, I remember them running, like, their top-end tournaments, their invitationals, and it peaking at, like, 12K. That's, like, Tespa-level Hearthstone, right?
That's who tunes in to watch 7.
Exactly. No, but I'm saying, like, those are the numbers, right? Yep, like, yep. If you look at, like, actual Hearthstone, it is, like, the third tier of Hearthstone. And so, when you have that, and then you go to something along the lines of, like, the Rainbow Six Pro League, right? And you have all of these big name people jumping onto it, right? Evil Geniuses, SK, Ninjas of Pajamas, Team Liquid, Immortals, all of them. But they're not in the HGC. Is it largely because they're drawn to the fact that Ubisoft seems to have a 3-year plan for them or a 2-year plan for them with revenue sharing versus, well, we don't really know about this cheer stuff because we haven't answered an email for 6 months? Like,
Someone forgot to hit the deploy button.
Really, like, what's the lure to a league that has less, but maybe there's stuff together, I'm probably answering the question for you, versus HGC?
Well, you have to remember that HGC has always just been kind of the Wild West. And because HGC as an entity only started last year, but they've been competing since 2015 in like, you know, ESL tournaments, that they were kind of the homegrown, thrown together tournaments. Sometimes they'd shown up at a DreamHack. Sometimes they do an ESL and Invitational, that kind of thing. And you had teams like Na'Vi and I think Evil Geniuses even had a team in there. They didn't last. They were gone. And it was just like, and even like Cloud9. Cloud9 was huge. I cheered for them in 2015.
Yep.
The problem is that, and I think the comparison comes to Rainbow Six League, they're coming out to the gate and they're saying, we are organized. This is our plan. This is what we have. Right. And
we respond to emails.
Yeah. Like in 2017, we had HTC Forum, which was like the heavens opened up and all of us fans just went, oh, you know,
wow, that was so much better than Seven would have done it.
I know. And because we actually had an organized plan. And then like last part of last year is when they switched around the team ownership guidelines so that now it wasn't actually owned by the team. It was owned by the sponsor or whoever owned like ownership guidelines, because they were like, oh man, we're having all these roster issues now because you can only trade two players and there's just all these issues. So every time it's just this really strange, it's all kind of Wild West.
Yeah.
It feels like they don't quite know what they want to do and they're learning as they go. And as a fan, that's really frustrating.
Well, let's talk. I want to talk a little bit more about the change in terms of who has ownership, right? I mean, yeah. I don't think in any other league currently, maybe a little bit of Dota 2, but that's even changing too, right?
Dota 2 is changing.
Yeah, that players own it anymore, right? Like, we've had too many fiascos in other leagues, and now you see brands not jumping into any kind of league where it says, well, your brand can be here, but you're at the fate of your players. And yep, that's scary for any brand to jump into. And I can almost guarantee you that there's things probably in Dignitas and Fanatics, their players'
contracts
yeah, that basically say that have harsh penalties for leaving. In that case,
yep,
yeah,
to stop them from leaving, essentially, right?
Because
they can't leave. They are not permitted to leave until there's actually the release period. So like when they're in until the next release period can be, they can't quit unless something like happens to them personally and they have to take a leave, and then they can't come back to the league for like a year. Right. So,
but these are changes that have only come into play with the player ownership swapping to the sponsors, right? Because part of the issue is everybody was moving around initially, was it not?
No. So here's how it worked before. There were no team ownership guidelines. You could only swap two players per transfer period. If you swapped more, you lost your spot in HGC, and whoever was in the open division competing at the top of that could get your spot.
Mm-hmm.
That's how it would work. So you could only do two player roster swaps, and that didn't work. They brought in the team ownership guidelines, and then they allowed it to be three players that you could swap out. And now, totally changed. Like, because so before it was the team that owned the spot, but you could only keep those two players. This is really confusing, I know.
Hold on. We need a flowchart. Too bad it's an audio show.
Right? I know. When the team ownership guidelines came in, it was grandfathered in to be whoever, like, so if your team was owned by a sponsor, then you had that decision of whether or not the sponsor would own the spot or you as the players did. Jesus. It was this I know, it was really messy.
I'm sorry, why don't we want to get involved in this again? This sounds great.
Exactly. And so here's a really good example of this. Gale Force Esports from the NA division. I know, the sponsor wants to get out of the HGC League. They then have to determine who of their players is going to own their spot.
Michael Udall, clearly.
Well, he does. it's the biggest point here is now a team can retain their spot and wipe out all five of their players and just redo their roster and still stay in HGC.
Which only makes sense, right? Like, you're the organization, you're investing in it. This has caused problems in the past, as Seven referenced. Like, I think most famously or most recently, CSGO had all that fun, you know, Team North debacle and trying to figure that whole thing out. And I think when you don't come with it out of the gate, organizations move on, right? Like Paladins form their new league with Wessa. Yes, they get the Wessa teams on board, but they got big names, but they know what they're signing up for. They know what the structure is. There's contracts in place. There's multi-year plans for how they get there. Rainbow Six Pro League looks like it's in the same boat. RLCS has, now while they did not come out as structured in the beginning, they have certainly managed to maintain more high profile squads. Now some of that you could arguably say has to do with like the relative lower cost of running an RLCS mm-hmm. team versus an HGC team. I think what doesn't match to me, generally speaking, is as an outsider I look at this and I go, they're asking a lot of these teams and not providing them enough support or safety net. Because why am I going to invest in a league where there's unequal information provided, where only some squads are called out for specific things, where there's not a lot of revenue sharing's not happening or disappearing for half a season, mm-hmm. and I could possibly get relegated on top of all of that? Mm-hmm. And yeah, you don't need to buy your way in, but it's expensive to run an HGC team, relatively speaking, to some of these other smaller leagues because of the lack of support that they're getting from Blizzard. And the upside is really, really low right now. And I don't know that you change that perception without just like a massive reboot. And I don't think Blizzard as a company is willing to do what, say, Hi-Rez is. I thought it was a bold move, regardless of how you feel about Paladins, a bold move to basically get a ready, out-of-the-box-made league out of Wessa. Blizzard's never going to lay in that bed with somebody. Like, they are never going to say, let's go find a ready-made group. Like, let's pull something like what we've seen with Rainbow Six. They will continue to try to hash through it until the HGC dies. And that's the part that saddens me, because I just don't feel like Heroes is a big enough esport to try to make it, like, structure it and try to run it in, like, a weird version. You know, it feels like it's trying to be too big while simultaneously having the support to be really, really tiny, if that makes any sense. Like, it's just, like, the resources versus aspirations are out of whack for this, and that's the part that, like, it just saddens me, because I feel like there's something here that they're missing.
Well, here's the thing you got to understand, too, is that Blizzard throws all of the money at it. There was a statistic that I read recently in 2018 that from like January to May, Blizzard or Heroes of the Storm was the fourth highest in tournament winning money. So like their players won the fourth highest amount of money in tournament play. Like think about that. That's against League of Legends.
So basically it goes probably goes League, Dota, CSGO, and then Heroes, I'd imagine. Just give it
exactly. Those. Number four. So and it was higher than Hearthstone. So when you think about it from that perspective, and you think about the fact that there's all of this money being thrown at the players to compete in these tournaments, where are we going wrong? Where is the problem?
How's it being distributed, I think, is the first question I would ask, right? Because Smite famously sat at the top of the esports earnings for years because they backloaded the grand finals. You won like a million, you know, zillion dollars in the grand finals, but you didn't make jack squat throughout the season. And when we talked to Hi-Rez when they made all the changes to the Smite Pro League, for example, so if you remember, they talked about how they needed to change the distribution, even if the same amount of money was available, to make it sustainable for teams that weren't going to win every year.
Yeah.
Right. Because you don't want to cycle through teams, especially if, I mean, we saw it even with Dota's done the change as well, right, to spread it out over majors and so on and so forth. Because when you have just a win-it-all kind of scenario, there's too much risk involved for team ownership, right, and players. And the league, you tend to have more fans and you develop more narratives and more of a more cohesive league if everybody's getting something out of it versus only one team gets something out of it. And so one of the things that they also, and I'm not sure how familiar people are with it, but like Vainglory is probably a good parallel to the Heroes of the Storm, right? You know, it started off, it was very grassrootsy, building its own thing. And then all of a sudden kind of blew up with creating a league and a structure and then having actual named teams hop in there, like I think SK, Cloud9, and Mouse so on and so forth. Yeah. Tempo Storm, yeah. So everybody kind of jumped in and did it, and they still retain some of those grassroots teams. I'm just still struggling to figure out like why HGC just can't garner that. I don't know. Is it because there's the lack of events outside of Blizzard Run events? Is it because there's no other way for either discovery of players or even this, you know, showing off of tournaments or anything like that? It's still just weird to me that HGC struggles while having a good payout. Like mm-hmm. that's, I mean, Hearthstone struggles because your payout is, even if you have a good team, it's still based on a coin flip half the time. I'm just joking. It's not really, but it feels that way.
Right.
Yeah, it feels that way to some of the pro players and the team ownership, right? Like there's no really easy way to like constantly perform in Hearthstone. It takes a lot of work. You can, but yeah.
Yeah, so
I don't see why it hasn't taken off in HGC.
Yeah, so that's interesting. So, like, Jules, is there anything to that? Like, is the money spread out enough? The HGC on paper looks fairly large to me when you look at it as a worldwide kind of setup. Like, does that money dwindle rapidly when you start to spread it out amongst, you know, 30-odd teams?
Yeah, because you're dealing with... Well, here's the reason why I think it falls off. Like, we have these big tournaments, but they're only, you know, 3-4 times a year. And that's about it. So, like, right now, the mid-season brawl qualifiers are happening. Actually, it's the group stages that are going into DreamHack. And that prize, the top... I think it's a $250,000 prize pool for the top teams, you know, $100,000 to the winner. It's like, this is BlizzCon level competition.
Right.
And that's spread across 5 players.
Plus whatever cut the organization gets, right?
Right. Yeah. And
we forgot to give you cheering, so
you're not making any
side cash.
I think that the development of the league is the hardest part of it because there's not a whole lot of the opportunity to get into the league is throwing together a team from
whatever,
the ladder. Hey, I've played with these people on competitive ladder and they seem to be okay. And then you fight your way through these amateur open cups that are happening that aren't even run by Blizzard. They're run by a company that is outside of Blizzard. And it's this kind of, it's very grassrootsy. The problem is that there's just, it's very hard to develop being a good player to get into the league and to qualify. It's very rare to see new blood coming in to that league. And I'm thinking about Overwatch, for instance. There's contenders. There's these, like, formulated leagues that are happening out there to help these players grow.
And Blizzard owns all of them.
And Blizzard owns all of them, and they're running that. And then you're reading about all of these, like, high school programs that are happening to foster players for Fortnite and League of Legends and Overwatch and things like that. They're not happening for Heroes of the Storm, except for Heroes of the Dorm. And that, like, I have talked to a whole bunch of people recently because I'm helping to run an open division HGC aspiring team. So I've talked to a lot of coaches who have done Heroes of the Dorm, and they literally, what they do is they put up a flyer on the frickin' billboard and say, hey, we'd like to create a team. And they get everybody from like silver rank to grandmaster.
Because there's nothing in place for these people to play otherwise. There's not this like TESPA for Heroes of the Storm that they're participating in that we're plucking from. It's artificial demand. We're saying, hey, come potentially get a scholarship by playing Heroes of the Storm. And I'm in college and I play Heroes of the Storm, so I qualify.
Like, yeah.
I pulled the little number tab off the paper. It just feels, when I'm sitting here and I've got like the standing sitting in front of me. And as I listen to this conversation, I can't get over the weird scale disparity here. Like, we talk a lot in many esports about how if they expand too big, it makes us nervous because the skill drop off, like you go off that cliff, things get bad really quickly when it comes to quality of players that are available. And you've got 8 teams in North America, 8 in the EU, 8 in Korea, and then the 8 in China, not counting open teams, not counting ones in the bubble and going up and down. That is a lot of teams for Heroes of the Storm. And because they're trying to do the multi-regionality thing that Overwatch League and StarCraft has done in the past. Like, it aspires to too much. If we just had an HGC and it was the top 10 Heroes of the Storm teams across the world, that would be far better. That's the WESA model, right? Like, let's just take eight teams and have a league. I think what gets lost is they're trying to have a 32-team league with a, you know, endless number of open, and the amount of resources going into, not from Blizzard, but the amount of resources going in to determine who is going to be the team that goes up into the HGC and fails and implodes miserably until the next one comes along, also just seems out of place to me. Like, there's just, I get it, keep the dream alive. We talked a lot about that on the show, but that just, it just feels too much for what the game currently is. And they would look a lot more successful if they just took the top, like, three teams from each bracket and consolidated it into an actual, like, Premier League. And then if you want to drop the other teams down into some sort of sub-league, yeah, if you want to waste that time and money, great. But in the end, I think the top 12 teams across the world, watching them play constantly, is far better than what we currently are dealing with.
Yeah. I mean, I'm an NA fan, so I enjoy watching Friday, Saturday, and Sunday every weekend of games. I mean, I'm not going to lie. But when you get to what's happening right now in the midseason brawl, which is literally like the top two of each region go and they compete against each other, and it's only like the top one from China, top one from ANZ, the skill gap is so wide.
Yep.
So wide. That the, you know, and it's like there's arguments about minor regions not getting the love and not getting the competition. And that would, Brian's suggestion would hopefully solve some of that, you know, to create a league where the competition is some of the best in the world instead of having the eight best teams in that region who maybe four or five of them are pretty amazing or kind of good and the rest of them are like, yeah, they won one game this season.
It's better to have maybe a dozen or 14 good teams versus a dozen okay, or like five good teams, seven okay-ish teams, and the rest Shanghai Dragons, right? Like,
yes.
That kind of thing.
I knew you were going there.
China is the biggest country. I think that's, it's very interesting, right? Because it's not just about the teams sucking. It's also like there might be a gem somewhere buried on a crappy team that would be better served on one of the more, you know, successful teams. But because we have so many teams to spread it out across, Overwatch League can't support this many teams. Why do we think Heroes of the Storm can? I think is the most basic way that I can put this.
It's a good point, but Overwatch League wants to add more teams, so it's just going to get worse.
Yeah, and I don't agree with that move. I've been very, very vocal about that being a bad idea.
Yeah, I also think HGC determined how many teams it was going to have in its franchise before Overwatch League figured it out, too.
Yeah.
And again, like I said, they're the testing ground for a lot, and I think they realized HGC is too much. We need to scale it back to actually make things work. And Overwatch is where they're at with that, which is probably one of the reasons why they didn't go flat out like 30-something teams.
Yeah. So, well, and I would like to see that they could scale this back very easily. There are enough teams in the HGC that implode that they could just let them implode and not replace them and just let it slowly dwindle down. I wouldn't actually let it dwindle, but like it feels bad because there's this like half grin, half like gritting of teeth going on Jules' side because she loves this game, and I know we've been very super negative on this segment about Heroes of the Storm, and I love the game. I think it's great. I think it has opened up the MOBA genre to a lot of people that otherwise wouldn't play, me included, like not a big MOBA fan. That being said, like, talk about like eyes bigger than your stomach here. Like, it very much still feels that way, and I would love to see. I think the answer to the question that Seven posed is, why aren't all these teams, these organizations getting in? Well, you've got a 1 in 32 chance where I can go into any other league that has similar sized prize pools and a 1 in 8 chance. And I know what I'm getting into, and it's, my cheer bits are going to be available at the beginning of the season. Oh, man.
Well, you can crap all over my game if you want to. I'm still going to love it, and I'm still going to support
it.
Yes, you are.
That's not crap. That's chocolate pudding. I don't know. Well, Jules, thank you for coming in and listening to us. I feel bad. We just basically were like throwing vegetables at Jules and Heroes of the Storm.
That's right.
You can catch Jules, we'll say every Monday, Wednesday on Esports Daily, but it's usually more days than that. Thanks, Brian.
Thanks, Brian.
Where else can where else can people find you?
You can find me on Twitter at JulesRPG and my other gaming podcast, gamer advice podcast called Torrent Think Tank. And that is records on Thursdays. You can check it out at torrentthinktank.com.
This week's topic, when your friends pick on the game you love in a public setting.
I'm already writing it.
Awesome. Well, we're going to take a quick break. And when we come back, we're going to take a half an hour to just talk about E3. Because, you know, we're nerds. We like games. And we can call it esports related. We'll be right back. And we're back, and it's time to have a little fun. Well, not that we don't have fun normally on the show, but we're going to have a little bit more fun. It is E3 week, which means the gamers and us in general get to get excited. We get to read a lot of stupid articles about, is this going to be the next eSport? Is that going to be the next eSport? But also get a look into some of the games that are basis for eSports. I think especially when you get into the console market and the FGC that tends to upgrade the games they're playing a lot faster, you tend to have a lot more esports-related news that comes out of E3. There's also some interesting moves of franchises going back to PC, which I think will have an impact on esports. So let's kick this off with some of the games that I saw that I'm super excited. And I think the most obvious thing we need to start with is Super Smash Bros. Ultimate. Finally, it is a thing. It is happening. Unless you're Waluigi, because then people are super sad if you're a Waluigi fan. But every single fighter that has ever been in a Smash Brothers game of any type, plus Ridley, is coming to the Switch in December. Are we hyped? Are we super hyped? Or are we just amazingly super hyped? Those are your three options.
All of the above rolled up into one. Because seriously, here's the thing that is really impressing me the most is there's something weird going on at Nintendo. It feels like they're paying attention for once. And this is a very huge example of that, bringing everybody back. The reveal video was like 25 minutes long that went through like every character and some of their changes in their moves, like, and the different skins you get. You can get skins from various versions of Smash or from various versions of the character in which the games that they played, and they talk about like what they're based on, and everything. Star Fox being on the Zero skin version essentially, and so there's like all these cool things that they're doing, and they seem to be caring a lot more about it, not in just a console sense, but when they're talking about the different moves and here are some of the new things you can do and the finishes and so on and so forth, it feels like they're starting to get esports somewhat in mind, and if Nintendo gets behind it, that's what I tweeted. I was like, hey, this is amazing stuff. Now, Nintendo, back it up and work on your esports stuff, because this is the easiest win you'll have. All the hopes you had in trying to get ARMS into something, a quarter of that would have made Smash.
It's all Smash needed.
That's all it needed. Something. Yeah. It was just recognition. And it feels like Nintendo's starting to recognize Smash is their esport.
Yeah, and what is promising is we kicked all this off with a Super Smash Bros. Ultimate Invitational Tournament that was hosted at E3 by Nintendo, so kudos to them.
Right.
That's a very tiny first step, but I will take it. We also now have Smash on a current generation console. That is awesome.
And you can use the GameCube
controller, yes.
Controller.
Yep, which everybody's stoked about. Like, that's something that was big when they released Smash on the Wii, the Wii U, I should say, we got that as well. So, like, the fact that they brought that along with the Switch is great. There's nothing negative to say here unless you're a Waluigi fan. I know people are, and we're going to get Waluigi. I was watching a video that IGN did where they were playing, like, all Ridley, but they were noting that they had bumped up the assist trophies for that build so they could see the options, and the one that they never came across was Waluigi. So we're holding out that my man is going to get a release as an official playable character. But 60-odd playable characters, there's, by the way, if you're planning on casting this, I believe the number of potential combinations is like 2,217 or something insane. So better start brushing up for that Nintendo-sponsored Smash eSports.
And what's crazy is that they're not even, like, if, from what I know of, they're not stair-stepping it out. That's, like, launching with
Yes, everything. There's not DLC. Like, this is not season one. Like, this is
right.
from the beginning.
That's insanity. That's just insane.
I'm stoked.
And it's awesome. It's, like, it's exactly what – it's more than what most people expected at all. Like, they expected – even just for them to release a new one, here's just, the character set.
Just give us Wii U with the DLC. Yeah, I know. Like, we didn't just get the cop-out we've got with, like, Mario Kart, which is like, here's the Wii U version with all the DLC included. Like, we got that and so much more.
Right,
so, super stoked on that. December 7th, 2018, get your pre-orders in now. I expect everybody to be playing some Mad Smash all winter. It's going to be awesome.
Right.
Along the FGC front as well, we got a couple of other things. So there were some announcements leading into it, including the surprise reveal of Dead or Alive 6, which is awesome, with 100% less bikini action. So for those of you that sometimes wish the Dead or Alive franchise was not also associated with that horrible volleyball game.
It wasn't horrible. That was fun. Oh, my gosh, man. Back in the day, we played so much of that stuff.
Because you were like,
it wasn't like the pervy stuff
and the boob.
No, it wasn't like nobody cared about that. But it was actually like fun to play against your friends with.
Well, now you can play Mario Tennis. It'll be fine.
Yeah,
that's
whatever.
That's the adult.
That's
version.
What you play around the kids. Nudge, nudge, wink, wink.
Oh God,
Daddy's off to play Mario Tennis.
I'm glad to see you've been working on your dad jokes there, Pops. Good job. Oh man, we're also going to get Dragon Ball FighterZ on the Switch. Woot, I can take Dragon Ball FighterZ with me wherever I go, so I'm stoked about that. We got another arena fighter, so a 3-on-3 tag arena fighter by Bandai Namco called Jump Force. This is going to include, you're going to get even more Dragon Ball characters in a fighting game, which, you know, okay. One Piece, Death Note, also going to be involved. We're going to see a lot of anime properties from Jump that is going to be in Jump Force. I have mixed feelings about this. The previous games of this type, obviously, like there's Dragon Ball Xenoverse. There is the other one that is escaping my memory, J All-Stars or whatever it's called. So there's, I don't know, I'm struggling here. And it's also because I'm also really excited about another anime-based arena fighter, and I don't care how good or bad it is, I'm going to play the living crap out of it, which is the My Hero Academia one, which was, we also got to see some more character reveals for that. If you are not watching My Hero Academia, what is wrong with your life? It is the best anime I have seen since Cowboy Bebop, and I do not give that recommendation lightly.
Okay, so I guess I have to stop playing Dead or Alive Volleyball to go watch My Hero Academia.
And yes, what is wrong with you? It is the greatest
I've
anime.
Been playing beach volleyball. No. I mean, Mario Tennis. Anyways, Mario Tennis. I'll quit with that bit. It's old now.
It's old.
Anyways.
Moving along, there's also some interesting changes coming in the sports space. So unsurprisingly, we got our string of EA games where they're going to make another freaking attempt at basketball. Jesus.
Oh, look at that.
Throw it a little shade. But we're going to get Madden NFL 19, obviously, and it's coming back to the PC, which I think is interesting. I would love to see them play the eSport on the PC as opposed to a console. I know not everybody will feel that way, but whenever I see a game that has an eSport that's tied to a console coming to the PC, I'm always interested about that. We're, of course, giving FIFA 19 back, which will include the Champions League, which doesn't have a ton of eSports implications, but I'm super stoked to have the Champions League, which previously has been with Konami's series, Evolution Pro Soccer, Pro Evolution Soccer, PES, yes, that I haven't played a ton, and they keep losing licenses like a sinking ship. They're like the HGC of soccer games. People just get sorry, Jules. But so we're going to be seeing that, and we're going to get NBA Live 19. The esports aspirations for that game should be because it's probably going to suck, and it doesn't get much more official than literally having the NBA use your game to be an esports. So the chances of NBA Live becoming anything, I don't have a whole lot of hope there.
I mean, you don't know, well-structured league and a little bit of incentive, and bam.
Shut up. Not the same thing when you literally have NBA teams with franchises, but sure, we'll give them a shot. Also, two interesting ones that tend to be lower-tier esports, but are going to be a big deal. We're getting Gears of War 5, and we're also getting Halo Infinite, which will also be coming back to the PC, which will be interesting to see where that goes for the respective Gears and Halo leagues, which have been... kind of not merged, but they're played at roughly the same time as Microsoft's over both of those. So interested to see where both those go. I'm stoked to see it come to the PC, though.
Yeah, there wasn't much in terms of playability. Actually, Halo, they came out afterwards, said that was just an engine video.
I know.
Like, it's literally just to show the engine and some of the art direction and how we're taking it, because we've been working for years on this engine. So they're like, you don't take much in terms of gameplay or story so much from that. But it was just a, hey, look, Master Chief's helmet's changing. I'm like, okay, whatever. Based on players' feedback, we want his helmet to change. I'm like, okay, I don't think that's the feedback you should be paying that much attention.
Yes, that was clearly the problem with Halo, was that Master Chief's helmet just didn't adapt with my tastes.
but we got to talk about Fortnite coming to Switch too, which is already on my Switch.
Oh, yeah. Not coming to Switch. Literally, like, go download it now. And
it's already on Switch, by the way.
Yes, it is. I already have it. And it uses the standard headphone jack for voice chat. Somehow magically.
What?
You do not need the stupid app. It is the first game on the Switch to natively support the standard headphone jack for a mic.
Oh.
Welcome to 2018 Nintendo.
Well, you got 125 million players. You've got some sway, I guess. You're going to allow us to use that headphone jack and let people talk into it.
And Nintendo's like, whatever you need. Now, an important note for people that are fans of Fortnite, if you haven't played on the PS4 yet, do not play on the PS4 if you have aspirations to play on the Switch, because if you've ever logged into Fortnite on the PS4, you cannot log in to that same account on the Switch. And this is thanks to our lovely friends at Sony that will not get their fucking shit together and allow people to play cross-platform. They are now the only holdout on so many games. Sony, you've got to lead in the console wars. Stop being protectionist and get into this.
Sony's just always been that way.
Why you gotta be that way, man? You got great games. That's enough. Like, you've whooped the shit out of Microsoft this generation. Just let it be cross-platform. Let it breathe. Let me play with my sad friends that only have an Xbox. Like, it's just not... I'm going to piss off somebody. I actually don't care between Sony and Microsoft, but somebody's going to be like, what are you talking about? The Xbox is the greatest console of all time, and you're an asshole. But, yeah, so stoked about that. And we got the celebrity... The celebrity pro-am for Fortnite also took place today, which was won by Ninja. Surprise, surprise. Actually, I did not think he would win. I think there was enough people involved. I didn't think that was going to happen. So him and your boy Marshmello ended up winning the Celeb Pro.
That was going to happen.
Yeah. But more esports related, the Fortnite World Cup is coming. Not a ton of details here. There's a really cool hype video everybody likes. But what are your thoughts here? I mean, there's not much more to go on than what we already knew.
Well, there isn't. But the one thing that they did mention that I'm a little confused on is they're not allowing any teams, like franchise teams. For one, they said they're not franchising. Makes sense, right? They want to keep it open. So the $100 million is going towards various tournaments. It sounded like a little bit like they will have tournaments that will then qualify for this World Cup. Yep. And so that's how you compete in those random tournaments and you get into it.
They also said
they would not allow any third parties to franchise teams, which means nobody else can create a league and franchise teams within that league and still compete within the World Cup piece or get any of that $100 million. So
it's like dangle out this $100 million and then tell nobody who knows anything about esports that they can have it.
Well, and no, yeah, that's weird, right? That they won't allow franchise teams and they won't allow anybody in it, because it's almost more messy that way, right? Because what happens if a team makes it pretty far, right, but then can't afford to go to whatever LAN event that is, right, that's going on, because they don't have a franchise. It's just literally five guys who end up being really, really good. Do they get sponsored? Does that count as being franchised?
Yeah, what happens if they get sponsored? Like, are we blocking them out of the only way they can make money is through this Fortnite League? And if somebody wants to, like, throw their name on a shirt, like, sorry.
Yeah, and what do you consider a franchise, right? What do you consider, like, an owned team, right? Like, the fact that you have to have an entity as a team to get sponsored, to pay to go to a land? It seems like some harsh words that might not be something that can be followed up. And on top of it, there's been a lot of esports teams out there or brands that have been buying up teams and so on and so forth. And so it's kind of like an F you to them while they're trying to play like it's for the people. And I get it into some ways, but we just talked about HGC having problems because they didn't have it.
Yep.
We're talking about all these other groups that are franchising up to create leagues. And now you're saying none of our 100 million will go to that. I don't know. You're going it creates a weird dichotomy within esports. I don't know how will it work? Yeah, something will happen.
It's Fortnite.
I don't know.
It's interesting, right? Because I get it at a very basic level in that it's very Fortnite, right? Like anybody can play, anybody can compete. We are the game of the people. Here's $100 million. Be good at the game. I get it. But that's not realistic. Like at some point, Fortnite is not going to be at the peak of its pop culture awareness, but is very much at. If anybody watched that damn event today, though, it is certainly a little cringeworthy. There were some cringeworthy moments for sure, like when Ninja came out with, like a security team, apparently. Like,
yeah. Well, he just had a meeting with the leader of North Korea. So
him and Dennis Rodman were over there shedding tears and solving nuclear problems.
They had their own invitational over there, right?
He went from that to coming out with security and giving us a little nip slip, like it was full on Super Bowl. It was I don't know. It's a weird scenario. $100 million is a lot of money if you're not planning on putting it into actually creating stability for teams, right? Like that's the interesting part. Is it's pure? You're telling me, and this is conjecture, but that means it's largely prize money, and you're not going to be screwing around with profit sharing and things of that nature. Maybe like you'll get a Ninja skin in Fortnite. Like, maybe that's how they'll do it, right? And they'll be about the individual players. I don't know. It's weird. We don't know. We don't even know what version, right? Is this going to be solo queue, duos, squads? Like
They said duo and squad, I thought.
Okay. So
I thought they did. I don't know. Again, they went to kind of like the Valve school of how to give a press release that almost makes sense. And so,
did they DM it to somebody?
I would say, but even less of the fact, like it wasn't sent to you by like a random DM on Twitter. First ever cease and desist by a DM on Twitter. Whatever. That's a whole another story. There's not a lot of info. There's like one line, I think, saying, I don't have it up now, unfortunately, saying like there's like maybe that they were just doing duos. And that was about it. Not a ton.
We have $100 million and not much else figured out. It has a name now. So we have $100 million and a name.
Yeah, that's the only extent, is that they gave it a name. All right. So,
and they probably pissed off. And every esports organization simultaneously dropped all their Fortnite players.
I don't know. Because in all honesty,
they're now content creators.
You can basically say, forget the $100 million prize money that could come from tournaments, create your own Fortnite league and still be successful. Unless Fortnite has some kind of way, shape, or form saying, no, you can't have franchise teams and we won't allow you to play a league or do whatever. There could be something in the EULA. I don't know. It is Epic.
It's all about GDPR. Yeah. We'll see.
I don't know. Yeah.
More questions than answers here.
Always.
Yep. We also got a release of October 18th for Soul Calibur 6, so stoked about that. There is definitely more boob physics in Soul Calibur 6 than there is in Dead or Alive.
But is there volleyball?
There is no volleyball. I apologize. There is no volleyball. Generally speaking, you know, the general gaming nerd in me outside of esports, there's a lot to get excited about. That Cyberpunk 2077 look, like, I just dig the aesthetic. I don't even need to know what I'm doing. Like, I'm stoked about that. We're getting the sequel to Neo, which I'm excited about. And I'm going to mispronounce this. I don't even have the name in front of me, but that Yoshishima or Toshishima Ghosts or whatever the hell it is with, like, I don't know if you saw the demo for that, but that was gorgeous. I cannot wait to pop that on my 4K HDR TV because I can just stand at the top of one of those hills. It'll be like Horizon Zero Dawn where I'm like, I haven't even not really played. I'm just like watching and taking screenshots.
I think the one funny thing that happened to me around the E3, especially the Microsoft reveals, which I loved how Microsoft just had some great stuff in their presentation, but it was I think it was Sunday. Was it Sunday or Saturday? Saturday I was having lunch with a friend of mine who works at Unstated Decay. He works for Undead Labs, and I was like, hey, you guys got anything going on for E3? He goes, no, you think we'd have something because we're like Microsoft's biggest selling game right now. They're like our sole publisher, blah 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 blah. But we just released like last month. The game's doing great. But we don't have any kind of real presence at E3. And I go home and I kick on the thing. And it's like, yeah, we bought Undead Labs. I'm like, oh, all right. So there's your
surprise.
And then I get an email chain from some people from Xbox Live and whatever, a message chain. It's like, hey, welcome to the Microsoft family. And he's like, oh, yeah, thanks.
Great.
He doesn't necessarily want to be one.
But my indie studio dream is dead. Yeah.
Yeah. So. But if it allows them to continue making State of Decay in the, like, the, to a much larger extent, to include more than just, like, maybe couch co-op kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Who knows? Not, it's not eSport related at all, by the way, but...
It's cool. The Spider-Man game continues to look amazing. I am super stoked for Insomniac's new Spider-Man game. Like, everything I've heard about it and how it plays is pretty amazing. Oh, man, there's so much. We get Mario Party that uses, like, two Switches at the same time. Kingdom Hearts 3 got delayed till 2019, which is going to get people super worked up.
I do want to mention one other thing that happened in the Microsoft reveal, which was the Gears of War. Right. The Gears of War reveal was hilarious. So it's like they immediately splash up like the Gears 5 logo and everybody's like, yeah. And then they're like, another logo. It's like Funko Pop. And they're like, yeah, it's coming to mobile. And everybody's like, I swear they had to abduct the audio from like the group because it was like the reveal of like Artifact at like the International. It was like, oh,
like it happened to Artifact, like, a big mess. By the way.
It's coming supposedly this fall.
Oh, okay.
Growing.
You're right. It's kind of funky. That's fucking hilarious. It's the Artifact response.
Yeah, but it was like that. And I was like, oh. And then they released the, like, oh, but then we're also doing like a tactics thing. And everybody's like, hey. And then they're like, and then it's almost like they were like, okay, we're done with that announcement. But like, oh, yeah, by the way, boom, Gears of War 5. It was like, yes. But it was just like total roller coaster of emotions.
I love it. Like, I love it. Fuck with the audience.
Yeah, it was awesome.
Last of Us Part 2 had the kiss heard around the world. Like, actually, like, if you've ever want to see people
don't
just
get. Care.
Dude, you get it's really good animation. I mean, I think it's awesome from a diversity standpoint, but it was like crazy how it just became about that like kiss. Death Stranding.
Play volleyball.
Death Stranding continues to be the game that I wish was a movie because the more they reveal, the more just fucked up it is, and I want you to like get Guillermo del Toro to like just make a fucking film about it because it's like dope as hell.
It's always awkward when your like trailer starts off with a baby's ass, so.
But they made it work. They made it work. I have no idea. They made the baby's ass work.
Can we end the show? We've gone from like beach volleyball to like they made that baby's ass work.
That baby's ass worked for me. You know, it makes sense in the context of the story. Oh, I have no fucking idea what the context of the story is, but I will say this: I'm buying it, and I don't even care if it's just one of those interactive movies where I just walk around and talk to people because there's something weird and crazy going on. And the more I see of it, the more I want to know. And yes,
that is. If like Domino's and any state that if Domino's doesn't jump into it with any state that has like legalized pot, I don't know. That's like a huge misstep on their part because like that is a get high and play it. And
I'm just, yeah.
Don't talk to people because you're too paranoid. I don't know. It's like it's so weird.
I know. But there's whatever. I have no clue what's going on, and the more they show, the less I understand. But I want it all the same.
You name me any game in the history of games where you can walk around with a baby in a bucket, basically. And people are like, this game is cool. Like,
this is so awesome. Like, yeah. Like, literally all that showed was the main character walking around a lot with babies in suitcases. And, you know, it's we're sold. It's my second favorite game behind the Gears of War Funko Pop mobile game, like, if I'm being honest. So it's a high level of recommendation, but yeah, overall, like we'll see. It's been a good E3. I'm going through my usual cycle of pre-ordering all the games on Amazon, and then over the year, I will slowly cancel all those pre-orders as I realize that I still haven't played last year's games.
As you see more and more of the game revealed and get more and more disappointed from the
if there would have been more baby ass, I would have been all about this, but unfortunately, not enough baby ass for me to continue to pre-order your game. So, yeah, that's E3 and nothing to do with esports, but, you know, it is what it is. So I think that's going to do it for this week's show. As always, if you want to check us out, you can on all your major podcatchers. We're on iTunes, Overcast, Pocket Cast, iHeartRadio, and TuneIn. You can get the RSS feed over at nerfthis.gg. And we always appreciate it if you check out our new daily show, Esports Daily, by myself, Seven, and Jules, where we bring you the top headlines in under 3 minutes from the day in esports. We appreciate those iTunes reviews. Keep those coming. We got an awesome one from Davey who says, we are the strongest esports cast out there right now. pour one out for the esports podcast if we're leading the pack. We really know our business and ecosystem, and we know when to crack a joke, which I don't think I necessarily agree with, but I appreciate that he thinks that we know when to crack a joke.
Maybe he thinks the whole show's a joke. I don't know.
He's like, I'm just being trolled. Where's the baby ass? That's really what he wants to know. If you work baby ass into your 5-star review, it's guaranteed to get read on the show. So keep those coming. We appreciate it.
Thanks for that.
Make sure people discover this crazy shit show of esports podcast. You can also reach out to us on social media. We're available on the Twitters at Nerf This Crew. You can also hit us up on Facebook and Instagram at Nerf This GG. That's going to do it for this week. We will see everybody next week with yet another episode of Nerf This.